Have you ever been super, super, super busy? Maybe you've been busy this week. You know, those times when your hands are just absolutely full of stuff to do. I was super busy earlier this week, and it seemed like when I got here, like there was just one more text message, one more email, one more human being needing me to help in a different direction from all of the stuff that I was already carrying in my hands already. And I brought my breakfast with me that day, but I never got to my breakfast. It had been like 2 hours. I hadn't got anything to eat yet. And I was like, man, I got to get something to eat. And one of the things on my list of things to do was to get up into the media booth and get some things prepared for this Sunday, also for Christmas Eve. So a couple hours had gone by. I was like, man, I'm getting hungry. Gosh, I got to get up in the booth. So I just started grabbing all my stuff. So I grabbed my breakfast, grabbed a cup of ice, grabbed look, I love a caffeine-free, zero-sugar, carbonated beverage with aspartame. I just love it. I do. I could drink them all day long. But I'm trying to cut back a little bit. So instead, I had a sparkling water that was naturally grape flavor. That's what I had, a little can of that. So I got my breakfast. I've got a cup of ice. I got my can of sparkling water, naturally grape flavored, and then I've also got a book with me, I've got a stack of papers, I've got a key, I've got my phone, I've got my reading glasses, I've got a pen, I've got, you know, 4 calling doves, 3 French hens, and I mean, I've got all this stuff in my hands, you know, and I'm trying to make it, and I think it's about 198 steps from my office to the booth, and I got all the way there. Man, I had everything was good, and as soon as I got there, all of a sudden, I could feel that can of sparkling water that was naturally grape flavored just starting to slide out from its slot. And next thing I know, I heard the tinging thud of that can hitting the ground between my feet. Now, I took a deep breath because I was fully expecting an explosion of water all over my shoes and my pants and everything else. And I looked down and nothing happened. Oh, gosh, it was glorious. That can was just sitting there, no problem at all. It was a true Christmas miracle. Phenomenal. Great. A long time ago, in a galaxy not too far away, there were some wise men. And those wise men, they came, and their hands were full of gifts. Gifts for who? Gifts for someone in particular. And what did those gifts and those wise men have to do with that moment? And maybe more importantly, what did their hands being full of gifts have to do with you right now? Well, let's see if we can find out. We are finishing up our series that we've been in this holiday called Where's Christmas? And our goal has been to try to catch a glimpse, to capture, if you will, the deepest meaning of the holiday, not just a day, one day in December, but something that lasts far beyond. Our message today is called Giving Christmas, and we're going to be looking in the Bible at Matthew chapter 2, beginning with verse 11, and this is what it says. Then they opened their treasures and presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So there's a group of wise men. They traveled hundreds and hundreds of miles to go find the one who was born the King of the Jews. It was an expensive and dangerous journey, and they had finally arrived at their destination. It wasn't a palace where they found the King of the Jews. It was just a simple house somewhere in Bethlehem. But the house was not their destination. Their destination was a person in that house, a specific person, a child somewhere between the ages of 6 months and 2 years, a toddler, if you will. And that toddler's name was Jesus. The name itself means to rescue. So they found their destination was the one that the angel said would be the one who would save his people from their sins. Jesus, the rescuer. The expectation, the anticipation that they had was all of a sudden a reality. And in the moment right before that, we see that when they arrived, They fell down and worshiped. They were so overwhelmed with joy that they finally found what they were looking for, that they were worshiping, falling down before this child. Isn't that strange? They would fall down to a toddler and worship. Why? Well, their journey. They had seen the star from afar, and now the door was ajar, and they were there. They were in it. They were in the middle of this moment. This journey that they had been on, they had seen things, experienced things, and even before they saw the star, God had been stirring something in their heart. There was faith stirred up in their heart. So when they saw that toddler, they knew they were not just seeing a toddler. They were seeing the King. They were seeing the Messiah, the King of all kings, the Lord of all lords. They knew that He was the Holy One. So they fell down and they worshiped. Now, did they understand all of that? Did they have all the theology figured out? Did they know all the details of the Messiah and the prophecies? They didn't have it all figured out, just like we don't have it all figured out. But they know what they saw. They knew what God was doing in their heart, and they fell down and worshiped. They were compelled to fall down and worship Jesus. They got low. And why? Why did they worship that toddler? Because there's no other response. If you truly see Jesus Christ, there is no other response. Last week, we shared the words of Charles Spurgeon, who said this: those who look for Jesus will see Him. Those who truly see Him will worship Him. Have you truly looked to Jesus? Have you truly seen Jesus? Have you truly worshiped Jesus? And maybe more importantly, are you worshiping Jesus? Not just have you believed, but are you believing? Not just sometime long ago you believed the story about Jesus, but right now in this moment, you are still believing in Jesus. When you think about the greatest treasure in your life, the one thing that defines who you are, that great treasure is Jesus. Does that describe you? How can you know? Well, this story of the wise men can help, and here's how. Because they gave gifts. They gave these gifts. They came with their hands full of gifts for Jesus. The early church fathers, and in many sense, believed that there was great significance in those gifts, that the gold was marking the royalty of Jesus, that the frankincense was marking a worship of Jesus, that the myrrh was marking a purposeful but impending death for Jesus. And all of that imagery is clearly seen in those gifts. The early church fathers, in many sense, have also said that those gifts had another picture, the picture of the fact that this is Mary and Joseph and a brand new baby. Man, they were a new family with not a whole lot. And all of a sudden, here are these very expensive gifts that have been offered to them. Those would be a huge blessing to this new family. And all of that could be true. It's just not definitively expressed in the Bible. What is definitively expressed is who received these gifts. These gifts were given to Jesus. The passage here says that they presented their gifts to Jesus. The word, the verb here in the original language has this meaning not of the giver, but the getter. In other words, it wasn't the gifts that are the most overwhelming image in this scene. The most overwhelming and stunning image is Jesus. The gifts are great. The gifts were nice. The gifts have some symbolism to them. But the gifts were only a reflection, just a shadow of the one who is actually receiving the gifts. Think of it this way. Did Jesus need gold, frankincense, and myrrh? I mean, did this toddler need gold, frankincense, and myrrh? He didn't need them. And yet they were reflections of honor to him, a reflection of the reality that he was worthy of gifts. When you give a gift, maybe it's a Christmas present or a birthday present or an anniversary present or an Arbor Day present or whatever gifts you have, when you give a gift to someone, part of that gift is an expression of love toward the person who's getting it. It's supposed to be an expression of the person who's receiving the gift. Now, that doesn't mean that there's no reflection on the person who's giving the gift, right? You know, if your Aunt Griselda is lactose intolerant and for Christmas you get her an annual subscription to the monthly Andy Bernard Cheese of the Month Club, you're not a good gift giver, right? That's not a good gift to give Aunt Griselda. So there's a picture here that there's some responsibility to the gift. But the wise men, they were not just good gift givers. They brought their treasures, things of significant financial value. And they came and they presented them. They offered them to Jesus. But this picture of presenting an offering is not about the giver. It's about the getter. Someone said, when you look at this picture of the wise men and them bringing these expensive, valuable gifts to Jesus, it's as if each one of those wise men was saying, look here, I'm giving you this because you are the true king. You're the one. And whatever gifts I have, whatever talents I have, whatever skills I have, whatever I own in this world, house or cars or money, whatever it is I have, none of those things will ever be as valuable as you. So I'm not going to hang on to them. I'm not going to hold them and worship them. I'm not going to hang on to and hold on to myself either. Here's my stuff. Here's my heart. It is a proclamation that you and only you can save and satisfy me. Have you made that proclamation? A proclamation that Jesus is the treasure above all other treasures? Have you looked at every part of who you are, everything that you own, and come to that realization that everything you have right now can disappear in a blink? And in that blink, all of the stuff that we put so much value on will 100% lose all of its value for you? But to have Christ, to believe in Christ, is the one thing that never, ever loses its value. Never. And to have Christ, to believe in Christ, to know Christ, is the greatest treasure and the most satisfying treasure in the universe. Is that what you believe? Is that what you enjoy? Is that what you embrace? Have you truly looked at Jesus? Have you truly seen Jesus? Have you truly worshiped Jesus? Listen to Spurgeon's words again. Those who look for Jesus will see him. Those who truly see him will worship him. And here's the next part. Those who worship him will consecrate their substance to him. Have you consecrated the substance of who you are to Jesus Christ? What does that even mean? Well, a moment ago we talked about how the gifts of the wise men was a shadow. Great gifts, but just a reflection of the one who's receiving the gifts. Those gifts were a shadow, but Jesus is the substance. About 70 years after Jesus was born, the Apostle Paul was writing to some folks in a place called Colossae. And this is what he wrote to them, Colossians 2:16. Therefore, no one is to act as your judge in regard to food and drink, or in respect to a festival, or a new moon, or a Sabbath day. What he's saying here is this: don't let anybody spiritually intimidate you. Don't let anybody say, well, you got to follow this New Year's diet. Well, you got to make sure that you do all of these holidays right, that all of these things, these are the things that you have to do. Don't let anyone intimidate you to say you've got to follow all these different religion and all these different religious things. Because no matter how many holidays you observe, no matter how many dietary laws you observe, no matter how many Sundays you go to church, no matter how many great Christmas gifts you buy, none of those things can save you from sin. And then Paul says this, Colossians 2:17, those things, they're not evil, they're not terrible, but they are a mere shadow of what is to come. But the substance belongs to Christ. My extended family was here last Sunday for our big family gathering, which was sponsored by my mother. And since mom was paying, we had some catering from a local barbecue legend. And in addition to the food that I got for everyone else, some of you have been telling me that I needed to try something else on the menu, and that is the house-made brisket hot dog. And I'm just going to say that out loud again because it's worthy of being repeated. A homemade, house-made hot dog made out of barbecue brisket. So I got one. And I'm going to tell you, if I looked up the word fabulous in the dictionary, there would be a picture of that hot dog. It was stunning. It was phenomenal. And as great and as wonderful as that hot dog was, here's the thing. We had a lot of other food. And so that hot dog, although it was fabulous, it was a side. It was my side. You know, it was just a side. It was not the substance of the meal. What Paul is saying is that anything great and wonderful in your life, anyone great and wonderful in your life, any Christmas great and wonderful in your life, any vacation great and wonderful in your life, any moment great and wonderful in your life is a side compared to Jesus Christ. It's a shadow compared to Jesus Christ. The reality of ultimate satisfaction, ultimate salvation, God's salvation and satisfaction is found in the substance, and the substance is Jesus. There is no other. The wise men came with their hands full of gifts because they had discovered something. They had discovered that there was help, there was hope, and there was love. They wanted that. They needed that. They saw that. I think sometimes we don't mean to, but we just miss the picture of all that's going on. It's not that Christmas is evil or bad. It's just we get so wrapped up in the sides that we miss the substance. Listen again to what Spurgeon said. Those who worship him will consecrate their substance to him. To consecrate, it means to declare, to dedicate. And substance, that means the most significant part. So what is the most significant part of you? It's your heart and your soul. It's the deepest part of your existence. So have you consecrated, have you declared, have you dedicated the substance of who you are, the deepest part of who you are, your heart and soul to Jesus Christ? Are you believing in and relying on Jesus Christ right now in such a way that if all that you had were gone in a blink, you would still have him? You would have the treasure of all treasures. You would fully have the reality right now and fully have the same reality when you die and fully and completely still be enjoying the reality of Jesus 10,000 years from now. What will you be doing 10,000 years from now? Will you be together with God or separated from God? Will you be separated from all that's good and holy and happy and satisfying? Or will you be together with God? Together because you have made a consecration, a declaration, a dedication that the baby in the manger is not just the baby in the manger, but he is the treasure. He is the ultimate reality, the ultimate substance of ultimate salvation. Have you presented the gift of the substance of who you are to God and following Jesus Christ? The words for one of the oldest Christmas songs, those words were put together about 1,200 years ago. And I know, you know, we talk about ancient, beautiful songs. I know you're probably thinking that this song is Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, but that's not the song. It's a different one. The song is, O Come, Emmanuel. And the words were written in Latin originally 1,200 years ago, and then somewhere around 1851, we have kind of the first English translation. It's been attributed to an Anglican priest named John Mason Neal. Neal's original translation had some different language. It wasn't just, O come, Emmanuel, but it was, draw nigh, Emmanuel. Isn't that great? Draw nigh, draw near. Isn't that what we really want? When that moment in your marriage, when that moment with your kids, when that moment with your aging parents, when that moment at work or school or church or with your own health, when that moment comes that everything feels like it's falling apart, that you're overwhelmed with fear or worry or stress or anxiety or anger or whatever it may be, isn't in that moment what we want? Is we want something to draw near. We want some help to draw near. We want some hope to draw near. We want some love to draw near. The reason the wise men presented those gifts, the reason they came with their hands full of gifts, is because they knew that help and hope and love had drawn near. They knew it. There was no confusion. Do you know it? I mean, do you really know it? Is the truth, the story, the reality of Jesus Christ, is it a nice holiday story that you'll forget once the decorations come down and you move on with life? Or is it your story? The truth of Jesus, is it your story? Is it the substance of who you are? Neal's original translation was followed by another one about 10 years later, and that translation is the one we most often see. And one of the verses goes like this: O come, thou day spring, come and cheer our spirits by thine advent here. Disperse the gloomy clouds of night, and death's dark shadows put to flight. You ever had anything dark and gloomy happen in your life? Ever had a moment that felt like death's dark shadows? Maybe you're having a moment like that now in life. Maybe that's an experience that's fresh to you. There's hope for that darkness. There's deep, rich hope for that darkness because God has already drawn near. Emmanuel, God with us, has already drawn near. Jesus has come, and Jesus is coming again. Are you ready for his return? Have you truly looked to Jesus? Have you truly seen Jesus? Have you truly worshiped Jesus? Have you consecrated the substance of who you are to Jesus? As this new year dawns, let us have hearts that are full. Full of hope, full of love toward the one who came, full of salvation. And let us come and worship. Come and worship. Worship Christ, the newborn King. Thank you.